From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and Lisa Braltz will provide us with another edition of In My Backyard. At the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
The numbers in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon finished higher for the day. Nearby December soft read up a penny, $6.59 and a quarter, the settlement price. The May at $7.09 and three quarters, 3 quarters higher. July wheat of next year at $7.08 and three quarters for the soft red in Chicago, up a penny. Hard red in Kansas City, $6.99 and a half, up two. December corn futures back in Chicago, $4.98 and a quarter, 9 and three quarters higher. March at 5.07 and a half, up 8 and a quarter. The May at 5.12 and a half, 7 and a quarter higher. July 5.15 and a quarter, up 6 cents. And September at 4.93 and a half, up 4 and a half. December corn at 4.81 and a quarter, up 4 and three quarters. November beans, $10.65, 3 cents higher. January at 10.75, up 3. March at 10.83 and a quarter, 3 and one quarter higher. And the May soybeans, 10.87 and a quarter. Up 2.5 cents for the day. July contract, 10.93 and three quarters, up 2 and three quarters. Next year's November soybeans at $10.62 and a quarter cents a bushel, up 4 and three quarters. The October bean meal at 2.92, now 40 cents higher for the day. October soybean oil at 43.79, up 35 cents on the afternoon. Mercantile exchange numbers finished the October live cattle futures at 95.12 and a half. They were 27.5 cents higher at the end of the day. December futures at 97.10, down, or rather up 2.5 cents per 100 pounds. October feeders at 108.92 and a half, down 27 and a half. November feeder cattle at 108.97 and a half, down 27 and a half. And the October lean hog futures on this Thursday afternoon, $74.52 and a half cents, down 75 cents. December futures there at $71.30, down 90 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, broadcasting from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, November crude oil futures, $81.55 a barrel. Their finish on the day just about $1.68 higher. And ethanol now at $1.98 and 8 cents, up 4 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at 3.62 and 2 tenths, down 24 and 3 tenths. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.24 and 9 tenths of a cent, down 5 and 7 tenths of a cent. We'll go back to the crude oil. I give you a higher number, actually down $1.69 the last trade, still at $81.54 a barrel. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,948, down 19 points at the hour. And the gold futures at $1,333.90, down $12.50. The U.S. dollar at 77.39. That's just about unchanged. The CRB index at 287.30 is down 1.85 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Sunny skies in the area, a high near 77 degrees. North-northwest winds at about 6 miles an hour. Tonight should be clear, a low of 44. Northwest winds around 6 miles an hour. It'll become calm after that. Friday, sunny skies, the high near 81. Calm winds becoming west-southwest. They'll tip the scales at 4 to 7 miles an hour. Friday night, clear, a low around 49 degrees. Southwest winds at about 6 miles an hour. On Saturday, should have some sunny skies, the high of 85. Southwest winds between 3 and 8. And Saturday night, it'll be mostly clear. We'll dip to a low of 53. On Sunday, it'll be sunny, a high near 83. Sunday night, cloudy, a low of 56. Columbus Day, that's Monday, a chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 79 degrees, and Monday night, partly cloudy, the low of 53. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast comes up near the bottom of the hour when we talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt.
agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line to take a look at the marketplace with us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
A little move in the marketplace. Continue to push corn higher. 30-cent drop on Friday last week was kind of ugly after the USDA added into their grain stocks reports about 320 million bushels, and then she started to come back, and we've gained it all back, I think, or nearly all of it. What do you think?
A lot of this week's push to the upside has to do, I think, more with outside market activity. I think there's still skepticism as whether or not there's as much supply of corn around as maybe what USDA stocks report indicated. You had a lot of end-user interest in wanting to buy a break. They've been kind of waiting around for a break for some time, and you basically saw end-users come in and buy it very strongly, and, you know, it pulled right off of the uptrending line that's been in place basically since late June and late July. So we went right down to the uptrend line, found support. And like you said, we've regained back Friday's decline, and basically we're ahead for the week. So unless we get a shocker tomorrow to push the market big way to the downside, we're basically going to close out this week with a weekly reversal to the upside, which basically negates the weekly down that we had a week ago.
Did I hear you not convinced early on in the little conversation up front as to why things moved this 30 cents? You said outside markets, I understand that, the Japanese, the dollar, all of those things. But you've talked about this being contra-seasonal, and that if we rallied into this, that we might have to turn around and go down. Are you still thinking in those terms?
Well, if you look at seasonals, basically this is the time of year where you start making a low anytime from October 1st into December 1st. Now, soybeans is more pronounced. It's more in the first half of October. Beans make a low, and then they begin their climb out of that seasonal low as we go on in the spring. Corn many times will track sideways to carve out a seasonal low. The up in seasonality in corn really doesn't kick into high gear until you get past the first 10 days of December. Then you have a very pronounced move to the upside on seasonality. So if we would follow probably at this point, it doesn't make no difference whether it's counter-seasonal or seasonal, is that maybe we're due for a period of sideways price action until we know a little bit more about outside market activity, and maybe we know a little bit more about supply-demand balance sheets.
It's safe to say that 30 cents below where we are now, about the bottom end of that trading range then?
Well, I would say, yeah, this 450 is awful good support. The way the market, though, has performed this week, you know, barring a bearish shock tomorrow, corn's actually in good technical position to go right on up through the top. But we're going to have to, you know, see what USDA you know, lays on the table here tomorrow morning.
What's the shock? 162 and a half. They find acres.
Well, either way, acres in October report, you just kind of fasten your seatbelt. Of course, everybody's already had a train wreck after last week's report, so I don't know if we're ready for another shocker or not. But when it comes for October reports, they're noted for acreage adjustments. And some surprises. So it could go either way. We could gain some corn, we could lose some corn. What happens if we lose 1 million acres of corn and lose about 3 bushels? Do you think you could buy corn tomorrow morning, Todd?
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, that's what I was hearing from your cohort yesterday.
But you know, you could maybe find 1 million acres, and then the yield maybe comes in at 162. You might not be able to sell it either. So I would say that if there's some surprises, they're in the acreage adjustments, and I guess my biases would be maybe some downward adjustment soybean harvested acres, but I've seen reports people think there's more bean acres too. So I guess I at this point you just kind of sit back and you wait for USDA to give to do its thing, and what it is what it is, and the market will trade it from that point forward. Probably the most important report tomorrow is probably the unemployment number. That will impact the value of the dollar and outside markets, and that will exert their influences over here into the ags, barring a major shock in USDA production numbers.
Another number that I think you might, from your vantage point, have a good idea about, it seems to me that many of the commercial side have been thinking that usage will be bigger than what USDA has so far been predicting. Are you still of that mind?
And on
were
corn?
You still, yeah, on corn.
There's room. Well, you know, each month you have to take a look at it because price is, you know, always moving, and price does a lot of times, especially a rising price, will maybe slow down demand, where a declining price maybe increases it. And we've had a nice rally in corn here over the past 30 days, 90 days. So demand could be slowing, but you don't really know that until you start looking backwards. But looking at the balance sheets, yeah, you could probably argue that USDA is still low on demand. You could probably bubble up the export number a little bit. You might be able to bubble up the ethanol number a little bit. But those are, you know, moving targets depending upon how prices perform over the next 90 days or so, too.
And we haven't talked much about beans. Will they raise that bean average national yield?
Well, I guess I would be surprised if they don't raise the yield. I mean, from what I've heard, you got to, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see it and go up 2 bushels, I guess, on a yield from what I've heard. But then, you know, they may lower acres to offset that increase, too, so you just don't know.
Can corn and beans unhook enough for one to go up and the other go down?
It's kind of hard to get them go opposite directions. My observation in the past has if anything, the negative one goes sideways if one of them wants to go higher. And now corn and soybeans, you got to almost keep in mind that this market may quickly look ahead and start looking at new crop balance sheets and acreage switching, whatnot. That might become the main focus once we get past this report. And then the market will play the ratios and keep an ear to the ground to see what farmers are going to do, because the market, for the most part, would like to see some corn acre increases. In order to get those acreage increases, many kind of feel that new crop December corn may have to offer farmers something closer to 5 than 4.5 at this point.
Thank you so much. And
very well.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Uh-huh.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon. My thanks, by the way, go to the folks out at the ADM Grain Elevator in Hume, Illinois. I visited there this morning and talked with Tanya at the scales and visited with Roger Tsai. He wasn't at the elevator but was out deep ripping some field the day and graciously allowed my crew to videotape. I think Jim Grafton was there, Ben Rogers, George Key. Thanks for listening, and have a good and safe rest of the harvest.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus pits high fructose corn syrup against sugar.
This month, the Corn Refiners Association petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to allow food and beverage makers to call high fructose corn syrup simply corn sugar. High fructose corn syrup certainly has received a bad rap over the past several years. While high fructose corn syrup is a natural ingredient, which the body handles the same as table sugar, critics have still waged an all-out war on the product, in turn providing misinformation to consumers. High fructose corn syrup and table sugar contain the same amount of fructose. 58% of consumers believe the corn-based sweetener contains more fructose, and research shows that labeling products with high fructose corn syrup is confusing to consumers. According to a 2008 report by the American Dietetic Association, validated that high fructose corn syrup is nutritionally equivalent to table sugar, containing the same amount of calories, and once absorbed in the bloodstream, the two sweeteners are indistinguishable. So why is high fructose corn syrup the scapegoat for America's health and obesity problems? That question goes all the way back to the Farm Bill. Critics claim that farm subsidies to corn producers are adding inches to America's waistline. Opponents have zoned in on high fructose corn syrup as a means to discredit the Farm Bill. Adding to that is the natural food movement, whereby food manufacturers are trying to remain relevant during the growing trend by cutting high fructose corn syrup and labeling their products corn syrup free. So, the name corn sugar is now in the hands of the U.S. government, which could take up to 2 years to make it official. In the meantime, it's up to farmers and consumers who stand to lose the taste of some of their favorite products made with high fructose corn syrup to educate consumers. Sugar is sugar, and just like table sugar, high fructose corn syrup is safe in moderation. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. We'll return in a moment. Lisa Braltz will be here with this week's edition of In My Backyard.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, fall. Crisp, clear mornings and autumn colors and apples. Just how many varieties can be found in East Central Illinois? Lisa Braltz discovers more than you think in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Earlier this spring, my neighbor Sam helped me plant two apple trees right up next to our garage. Though our backyard is pretty large, we don't have much room for trees thanks to all the garden beds. So we decided that espaliering the trees, pruning and training the branches to grow along wires against the garage, would be the way to go. Sam was a bit of a Johnny heirloom apple tree in the neighborhood this spring. Thanks to him, I ended up with a Gravenstein and a Cor Pandupla, and they're growing beautifully. Thanks, Sam. The problem planting fruit trees, well, not the only problem, is that they take a few years to actually produce fruit. I mean, if I had planted these trees 5 years ago when we moved in, I'd be looking at a harvest in a couple of years max. I figure my daughter will possibly enjoy her first apple from one of our trees the year she graduates from high school. That's in 2016. At some point, I fantasized about having an orchard, about living on acres and growing all this fruit. When I took a field trip to an orchard I'd heard about in Monticello, Illinois, I'd envisioned acre upon acre of apple trees. You know, an orchard. When I got there, I discovered that Wolf Orchard had just a couple of acres in apples, but they were heirloom apples, 68 varieties of them, apples most of us have never even heard of, apples whose color and prolificness defied description. There were thousands of apples on these trees, thousands. Once again, even though I automatically championed small for myself, I found myself thinking way too big where others were concerned. Ron and Hope Wolf, the orchard's proprietors for the last 22 years, are doing just fine, thank you.
I think Ron decided he would like to grow a few apple trees or a few fruit trees just as a hobby after he retired. And that was the business plan. And a few fruit trees grew into a lot of fruit trees and then more and more varieties. And it is just an interesting project and an interesting hobby.
Then we had a lot of fruit, and we didn't know what to do with all this fruit. First, we started selling out of our garage, just by word of mouth, some people that we knew. And then we went getting bigger and bigger. We built a shed, and we just expanded, and it just grew.
The recent interest in getting food from local sources has given them about all the business they can handle, says Hope.
Well, you know, when we first began, we noticed that our population of customer was the older customers that had heard of these and had these type apples, these heirloom apples, when they were growing up or on their farms or in their backyards. So that was the beginning of the attraction. And then, by word of mouth mostly, it was the varieties that brought a lot of people in. And then the fact that they can taste of these apples and get a little bit of a history of each apple when they come to visit. And the kids are the ones that have the most fun. They will taste everything.
They've planted every tree themselves and have tasted every apple. Hope's a whiz at telling you which apples are best in a pie. You have to have a mix of sweet and tart to get the best flavor. And tasting these apples is a revelation. Where else in town is one able to eat a couple of apples worth of slices from apples named Northern Spy or Winter Banana or Smokehouse? I know, apples are apples, right? But they're not. These apples all look, smell, and taste different. They have seasons. What was ready in August is done by October, but another apple comes in to take its place. Basically, it was driven home that we're completely missing out if we only eat the 5 to 8 varieties of apple available in a traditional supermarket. And the more of those apples we eat, the less likely it is that the heirloom varieties will survive. It's partially why Ron and Hope have spent their retirement growing apples.
I was aware that a lot of these old varieties, some of them well over 200 years old, were going extinct. I decided I would do my thing and try to grow some of the older varieties and preserve them.
Do yourself a favor and grab an apple from someplace besides the grocery store. Make a pie or an apple cake with caramel sauce or, Hope's suggestion, fried apples. Revel in apple season. It only comes once a year.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. If you have the opportunity, please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's WILLAG.ORG. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Noodle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, Jacob Schwepp demonstrated his process for making artificial mineral water. A German silversmith, he promoted Joseph Black's process of creating carbonic acid gas by combining chalk with sulfuric acid and then adding the gas to water under pressure. Artificial mineral waters were thought to have medicinal properties. It was not until the 1800s that CO2 was used for soft drinks like ginger ale and Coca-Cola. In 1893, cream of wheat was developed by Nabisco Foods. millers in North Dakota battling an economic depression were looking to revive their business. The head miller, Thomas Admaden, convinced his partners to make a porridge out of farina, and cream of wheat was born. In 1851, Will Keith Kellogg died. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. And in 1997, prions were discovered. They were called an entirely new gene of disease-causing agents. Prions have been identified as a cause of mad cow disease. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Pete Lavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us to take a look at a gorgeous forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete. How are you?
I'm fine, Todd. Good afternoon to you.
It is a gorgeous day here, and I suspect it's going to stay that way for a while.
Yes, it is. We've got a taste of warmer weather that, with a brief interruption with just slightly cooler weather, maybe on Saturday night or Sunday, but you won't notice it. It'll stay warm right through Tuesday before we turn colder again. And we're going to see temperatures in the upper 70s pushing 80s in a few spots this week. And this coming behind the first frost of the season, really, for parts of central northern Illinois and a freeze a little bit farther north, is what is usually described as Indian summer. Indian summer is that period you get in the fall that follows the first good cold outbreak of weather and then returns to conditions more reminiscent of summer. So we have a wonderful time to enjoy about 4 or 5 days of Indian summer coming up.
Excellent. And our cold wasn't all that cold, but I guess it got down enough, and it did, to give us a little frost. And that cleaned up the fields and ripened up the end of the beans and all sorts of things here in the Midwest.
Right. Yeah, frost is bad when the crop isn't mature, and it's welcome when it is. And that it gets the weeds out of the way and lets you go at it.
Indeed it does. Okay, so let's take up what the rest of the world looks like. I'm concerned in particular about South America, what your short-term and long-term outlook might be for the bean crop there.
Okay, the problem there was that it had been wet down south, and that's not bad. Maybe even a little excess, but they'll take that in planting time. But it had been dry in what's south-central Brazil, but that just got relieved this past week. All the rain that was down south shifted northward, got up through those central districts, so they're getting healthy, dried out a little in the south. They will see a few more showers later next week, but the prospects there are greatly improved. And warm and dry weather in Argentina now is also helpful. The one spot that looks a little troublesome now, if you have to look for trouble, would be out in Australia, where Western Australia is having a dry start to the season, and they're having trouble getting their new crop into the ground. But alternatively, in Eastern Australia, they've had plenty of rain. Everything there is looking very good. So similar to other parts of the world and even countries, one end of the country is good, the other end maybe isn't doing so well. We're looking for another dry week there in Western Australia, and then we'll probably see some showers finally work into that area. But that's an area probably that bears watching over the next week or two.
Thanks so much, Pete, and we'll talk with you again next week.
You will do.
Mm-hmm. That's Pete Lavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being with us today. Again, thanks to the folks at Farm Credit Services for helping out at the ADM Grain Elevator in Hume this morning, along with the Illinois Pork Producers Association, IPPA, and Farm Credit Services, feeding lunch to all the folks that are still moving through the fields and bringing in the end of the harvest around Hume. I was out there to say hello to the farmers and to talk with them just a bit about how things have been going. Of course, it's all gone very, very well this season. Have a great afternoon. Stay good and stay safe. I'm Todd Gleason.